I can't imagine teaching my beginning lessons without rote pieces. And they add so much imagination and expression to the music. And it's such a wonderful way to work on technique because they're not looking at music. They're not trying to overthink and decode all of that music. So they can really open up their ears and listen to the sound and look at their hands and focus on how their body feels, how their body's moving, what sounds are producing.
Hey teachers, and welcome back to another episode of the Topcast. This is episode number 207 with a guest who I'm looking forward to introducing to you in just a moment because she's an absolute superstar and we've been friends for quite some time and it's great to finally have her on the podcast. Now, as you know, we're into September. Spring is starting to spring is coming out here in Australia. I hope you're going well wherever you are in the world. I know that parts of the world will be heading into winter and the summer's behind you and you're back to teaching, and other parts of the world we're going to head into holidays. But whatever you're doing, wherever you are, I hope things are going well for you. My guest today is a pianist, educator, and composer, making music in a unique style that draws upon influences of classical, Spanish, film, and improvisational music. Through her globally successful Little Gems for Piano educational series, she seeks to inspire, include, and connect individuals. She recently debuted her original solo piano album, Central Star. And just before I introduce the fabulous Paula, she wanted to mention something that she didn't get time to mention in this interview. And I just love her approach and the things that she says in this. So let me just read out what she wrote to me that I want to preface today's episode with. And Paula says, I think the main thing I should have mentioned that I usually include in my presentations is I want to change the story of piano lessons. So many people have this very negative association with learning music. Piano has always been such a joyful endeavor for me and it has helped me get through so many difficult times. I want all students to feel that same connection and to have that creative outlet in their lives. I created my music to offer a way for students to connect to music making. And in the beginning stage, rote pieces are the quickest and most effective way to provide that emotional connection and strong foundation. Well, hear, hear, Paula. I couldn't have said it better myself. Missions and values are 100% aligned, and that's why I've enjoyed this interview so much. Now, just listen out. Paula gives some great discounts for some of her books at the end, and you can also check her out at the Top Music Marketplace. Let's go and meet Paula Dreyer.
Welcome to the show, Paula Dreyer. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me here, Tim.
I actually can't believe it's been this long. It's taken me this long to get you on the show because we've known each other for so long. I've always loved what you've been doing. And so many people know and love you as well around the world because you're just such a beautiful person and you create such great resources. So it's an absolute pleasure to have you here finally. And apologies that it hasn't come sooner. How are you going with the current kind of pandemic style of teaching that we're all enjoying these days?
I'm actually doing quite well with it. I was already teaching online quite a bit before the pandemic hit. So I feel fortunate that I was already somewhat familiar with that world.
Okay.
So I've been navigating it. I think the hardest thing is having my children at home all the time. So trying to teach with them around has been the biggest challenge.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
They are 6 and 10. We have two daughters. Mm-hmm. And so they're just at that age where they're old enough where they can entertain themselves and the older one can roam around the neighborhood and find friends. But it would be more helpful if they're in school or had a sitter.
Yeah. I hear you. We've got our two remote learning and it's just lots of fun. How many students are you teaching these days? How big's your studio? Because you're doing so much composing and performing and things like that. So what's the kind of breakdown for you?
So right now I have about 10 private students and that's what I had all last school year. And we recently moved up to Oregon. We were in the San Francisco area for a good 20 years. And then we moved up to Oregon and I kept quite a few of my San Francisco students. So that's why I was teaching online. And at the time, no one was really doing that. It was only 2 years ago. And it seemed like this kind of crazy idea to keep some students and teach them online. But quite a few of them stayed with me. And then I only have a few local students. And then the pandemic hit and now the whole world is teaching online. So it doesn't seem so bizarre anymore. So I have that. And then I also have a course that I launched this summer called Piano Flow. and that has 10 people in it.
So oh, fantastic.
20 total. So one is a group, kind of hybrid of group and private instruction, and then 10 private students.
Great. And of course, you're a composer.
Right.
And do you perform? Are you performing as well? I'm sure I've seen some things on Facebook of you.
Yes, I just had a big concert last weekend. Strangely enough, there's a beautiful venue in our town. I live in Bend, Oregon, and there's a beautiful little hall called the Tower Theater, and they're just doing a soft reopening. So they have limited seating, and everything is socially distanced, and they're sanitizing everything really well. And they're just using mostly local artists to perform. So I was fortunate enough to be able to perform my whole album that I just released called Central Star. So I played the whole thing from start to finish at this venue where in normal times it would have been very hard to book a show there.
Oh, it's
where
great.
Many people come perform when they come to town. So that was really exciting. And then I had another streamed concert. I was supposed to do a concert in San Francisco, and that ended up being streamed. So I did that a few weeks ago. So I've been doing quite a bit of practicing and preparing for those.
I bet. And recording it. You recorded an album too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that has been a big project kind of over the last 2 years, I would say, that stemmed from our move. So we were in San Francisco, as I said. We were in San Francisco and Oakland. And I had a really nice music career where I played in a musical called Beach Blanket Babylon that was no longer running, but it was the longest running musical theater production in theater history. So it went for 45 years.
Wow, I've definitely heard of it.
Yeah. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, they did it in Vegas and Hawaii. They played for the Queen of England.
Wow, there you go.
So really wacky, super fun show. So I played for, I think, 11 or 12 years in that show. And then I freelanced. I played with the Santa Rosa Symphony as a sub, and then just lots of accompanying and teaching different really fun chamber ensembles. But a really active playing career, and of course all of my students. And then we moved up to Bend, Oregon, which is not as, it's a smaller town. It doesn't have anything like Beach Blanket Babylon going on.
Right.
So it was just me. And that's when I really started just composing at a professional level for solo piano. And this whole album just kind of sums up my feelings around the move. And it was such a healthy, cathartic way to process my emotions and to deal with the complexities of parenting and being a musician, starting over. There's all sorts of recurring themes throughout the album.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about your music a little bit later, because I'm very, very excited that you're one of our Top Music Sheets composers for this month, our featured composer. So we'll explore some of that a little bit later on. But what people most know you for, of course, is rote teaching. I think at the end of the last episode, I called you the rote teaching queen. just before we go on, because we're going to talk about this a little bit, what's your definition of rote teaching?
So rote teaching to me is nothing to be afraid of or ashamed of. And I just think of it as another way of transmitting information. And it's just teaching sound and movement through demonstration or modeling. So instead of looking at the music first and interpreting that, you're learning from watching the teacher and by listening.
And this is definitely the thing that has brought you to many teachers around the world. What got you into focusing on this area of teaching, at least initially?
So this happened, it's kind of one of those light bulb moments. So it was early 2000s, and I was teaching out of Francis Clark Keyboard Musician book. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Is that the Music Tree one?
It's not Music Tree. It's just called The Keyboard Musician.
Okay.
And it's a very thick book that I've used with adult beginners. And it's the same philosophy as Music Tree, where you're learning by intervals and landmark notes. And then at the end of every unit, there's a short little rote piece that's in this tiny print. And that's how I first discovered rote pieces. So I was teaching an adult student named James. And it was time for a recital. And I said, what would you like to play? And he said, I don't like anything I've done. I don't want to do anything. And I said, well, what if I wrote a piece for you? I could write a piece on the spot. And I'd never even really written much before. I don't know why I even had this idea. And out of nowhere, I wrote the piece Retreat. So I was just standing up on the right-hand side. It's like very high. This has these fifths, and then I do the same phrase, and I break it up from the top to the bottom. And then I wrote this whole piece. It just came out of nowhere, the whole thing, start to finish. And he said, wow, I really love that. I want to perform that one. So he ended up performing it and loved it, and that's what sparked the whole idea. And out of nowhere, I just thought, I really want to make a compilation of rote pieces, and I don't think there's anything out there like that. And I really wanted to get beginners excited about learning piano, and I thought it would be such a great way to access students' imaginations and emotions. So I got a grant from that music school where I was teaching James, and I wrote the whole book, and the rest is history.
That became Little Gems number one, did it?
Yes, that was that became volume one.
Right.
So it wasn't written in order. There's a whole story behind it, if you want to hear.
Well, I'm keen to also hear your own lesson background. Were you taught in a creative, compositional way, or did you have quite a strict, traditional upbringing on the piano?
I had a very traditional training. So I started at age 7, and my teacher was very dry and quite strict, I think. It was all about reading. We had hour-long lessons. She was the neighborhood.
You had hour-long lessons at age 7?
Yes, and I'd walk to her house by myself. Wow. She was very proper. Like, I remember getting in trouble one time. I had gum. One time I forgot my book, and it was just like this worst thing you could ever imagine. She had me sight read for the whole hour.
How did you keep playing? I mean, that is enough to put a lot of kids off for good. Let's face it.
I was never, ever turned off of piano my whole life. And I remember all of it very vividly. I remember the moment my mom asked me if I wanted to take piano, and I was very excited. I remember my lessons very well. I can picture the books that I used. I can picture the music. I can picture the pictures in the books. And I almost can't remember a time where I didn't know how to read music. I don't remember it being a struggle. It was always a positive experience, no matter what the teacher was doing. And I loved just entertaining myself in, our piano was in the basement. We had this very out of tune upright, and the F sounded like this.
Oh, I love it.
I think I played on that for a few years. Who knows what it did to my ear? But I had all of this music that my grandmother had given me. She was a professional pianist for her church, and we would always play together. So we had just like tons and tons of music, and I would get out music that was way above my level and sight read it. And I just, for some reason, always just loved making music, and it was a wonderful way of just entertaining myself as a kid. No matter what was going on in the lesson. And I also, I've always been a very high achiever and top student. So I think that was probably part of it. I really felt a need to be prepared for my lesson, and I never wanted to let the teacher down or feel like I wasn't doing a good job. So that might have also started some of those early achievements. And then as I built that foundation, then it started to become very fun.
As you'll remember from last week's episode, we finally launched the Top Music Marketplace. This has been a project of mine it's been in my head for about 3 years, and a whole lot of hard work for the last 6 months. And I must say, I'm so thankful to our 64 current sellers for all the work that they've done to upload all their products. We've got over 540 products now for sale at the Top Music Marketplace. And as a podcast listener, if you haven't yet used your 10% discount for your first purchase, then, well, what are you waiting for? Go and grab something cool. all you need to do is head to topmusicmarketplace.com and use the code PODLAUNCH10. That's P-O-D launch, L-A-U-N-C-H, 1-0, PODLAUNCH10, and go and have a look at all the great things that we've got going over there. It's been so popular and everyone's so excited. I can't wait to share it with you.
Did you do any composing when you were younger, or was that story that you just retold before literally the first time you started?
So I was thinking about that. It's kind of interesting. So all of my studies were extremely traditional. I went all the way up to a master's in piano performance without ever having a teacher teach me about lead sheets, improvisation, composition, any of that stuff. It was all strictly classical, interpretation, theory, ear training. It's a very solid foundation, but none of the other creative aspects. And I was thinking about it when I was like an early teen. I remember writing out Imagine by John Lennon. So I was transcribing it, and I don't even know if I was listening to it and stopping and starting, or if I just was sitting at the piano and figuring it out. But I got out music paper and I wrote it out and I figured it out without anyone explaining, like, this is an exercise you could do and this is how you can do it. And then also when I was 15, I remember writing this melody. And that's all I wrote. And I brought it to my teacher and she just said, wow, that's really beautiful. That's so nice. Like, what key do you think it's in? And that was all we ever did with it. So if I was a teacher and someone brought me that, we would just really roll with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Write it out, complete the phrase, come up with a new section. So that's part of my mission now, is to train teachers how to work with their students to help develop any of their creative interests, like composing and improvising. So I think it was, it's always been like a part of me, even though it wasn't developed at that younger age. And then in college, I went to McGill University in Montreal, and I would practice for hours a day on Bach and Beethoven. But I also would do these crazy free improvisations, I think as a way of just like getting out some of my angst. And one of the jazz students came in and he was like, oh, you're doing a free improv. And I didn't even know what that was. I didn't know that that was a style or which artists do things like that. So just little things throughout my life were starting to emerge, even though no one was asking them to come out.
And then it took to your starting of, when did you start teaching?
I started teaching very early on. I think in high school, I would teach neighbors that asked me.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I taught at a music camp that my high school teacher hired me to do. And I had a couple students starting in college. Even in high school, I went to a boarding school for the arts, Interlochen Arts Academy in Northern Michigan.
Oh, did you? Ah, didn't know that.
And I would teach some of the non-music majors piano.
Interlochen was just a summer camp, or is that just what I've heard? It's an all-round, all-year-round program, is it?
They have both. So they have different summer programs, and then they have the year-round academy.
Wow, there you go. And you went there for do you go there for a year or your whole high school, or how does it work?
I went there for 2 years. So that was something really positive that came out of another move. So I moved throughout my whole life. And
is that because of your parents' work or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of my dad's job.
Yeah.
So it was all fine until I was 15, and then I had to move, and we were in Texas for 4 years and got transferred up to Michigan. And it was a really difficult time to move a teen and, you know, the weather, so many different things. My siblings went off to college, but I somehow found out about Interlochen during that year. And ended up applying and going for my junior and senior year. And it was very life-changing. And
I've heard amazing things about it.
Yes, it's a really magical, incredible place. I went there last summer and brought my children, so that was fun to
Show
them. Yeah.
So coming back to the last 5 or 10 years, how long have I known you? Maybe 6 years, 7 years, something like that, when I first saw you at conferences.
In San Antonio.
Okay.
Whenever that was.
You've always been at these conferences. You've run your booth. You've been giving showcases. You've been pushing so hard and to teach teachers about this concept of rote. Why did you decide to self-publish your little gems and not try and get them listed by a big publishing house?
So it was not actually a choice. So I wrote these in my late 20s and I submitted it to Alfred and to FJH. And Alfred wrote back and they said, this is a really amazing concept. We love everything you've done, but we feel like it's too expensive to advertise it. And then FJH wrote back and they accepted it. And they were very enthusiastic and they wanted me to write another volume. They thought it would be good if it came out with two different books. So I did an artist retreat. I went to Portugal for a summer for a month and I stayed at this beautiful farmhouse and I just composed all day and they had a swimming pool and hiking trails.
Oh my goodness, sounds like something from a movie.
Wow. I was looking at my photo album the other day and I was so grateful that I had that as part of my life, in contrast to parenting. I love parenting, don't get me wrong, but you can't.
We all need a break sometimes. Yeah.
It's just nice to have that time. So anyway, I went there and I wrote basically volume 2 of the Little Gems for Piano for FJH. So I came back, submitted the whole thing to them. And this whole process took about 3 years. I was always talking to the editor on the phone and we were changing little things here and there. And then I think it was 2006. I hadn't heard from them in a long time. And they finally reached out and said that they had let go of my editor and the whole project kind of got lost. And then they started to work on it again. And then this was so long ago that we had a big discussion about if it should get released with a CD. And I felt very strongly that it needs to, because it needs to be heard. The students need to listen to it throughout the week.
Right, but that's an important part of the rote teaching process, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they did not want to spend the extra money on the CD. So we decided to go our separate ways. And because it was so easy to find that publisher, I assumed, okay, it's going to be really easy for me to just find another one. And that was right when the world was really changing in terms of publishing. So everyone I reached out to said, we are not accepting anything. They weren't even looking at anything.
Is that because there was sort of mergers going on or something? What was happening?
I think just with the whole internet, with everyone just starting to self-publish, and I don't know exactly why. It's just when I reached out originally, people were interested right away. And then when I reached out a few years later, they weren't even looking at materials.
Right.
So I think there was also the economic downturn that was going on. So it was, in the mid-2000s. So anyway, then I got married and then I focused on starting our family. We had these two daughters and it was always kind of in the back of my mind. Like I would think, I wonder if I'm going to be on my deathbed and I'm going to be so upset that I never published those books or that those books never got released. I just always really felt like they were going to be impactful for people if they knew about them. And once my younger daughter was around 1.5 or 2, that's when I started to really get into self-publishing. And I did an internet search and I thought, I wonder if there's anything out there about rote teaching by now, because at the time there was nothing. So it would have literally been my works and those pieces in The Keyboard Musician and then Music Flight or
LP. Not sure. Pierce. I know the name. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you really were a pioneer of this approach. It's changed so much in the last 10 years. You must be incredibly proud of, because you've been pivotal in this.
Right. It's really exciting. So I did a quick Google search and I saw that Dennis Alexander had a book and he was someone that I had thought, I wonder if I could reach out to him and maybe he would do this with me. Like that was kind of in my head. And then sure enough, he had done one with somebody else. So that was really exciting that there was someone as wonderful as him who was involved with rote. And then there was the whole Piano Safari team.
Of course, yep.
So that's what got me really excited. And I was like, this is happening. Like people are are doing this. And now it wouldn't be just me trying to convince the world of this. So I did that first conference in San Antonio where I met you, and I changed the title. It used to be For the Aspiring Pianist, and I changed it to Little Gems for Piano, and I got it professionally designed and made all these instructional videos. So now with the internet, it's so wonderful. You don't have to wait for a CD or DVD. Just can make videos, and people can access them so easily. And that was the start of all of those conferences, and I've been to most of them ever since.
Yeah, I mean, you have worked so hard, and it's created this groundswell, as you say. Piano Safari have brought out books. Dennis Alexander's books out there. Samantha Coates with the Blitz wrote. She's done it as well, and you know, it's become quite a normal part of a teacher's repertoire now. There isn't that kind of, ooh, rote teaching, what's that? That doesn't sound right. It's kind of approved now because so many people have been doing it. So congratulations, because you have played a huge part in that. And my goodness, you have worked so hard. And I've seen you sit for hours and hours at booths at conferences and wondered how on earth you did it. But look at the effect it's had and the way that you've been able to impact so many teachers around the world. So congratulations.
Right. And that's been exciting to watch it grow, because the first time I went, I wasn't involved in any Facebook groups or anything. I was just completely unknown and got this booth. And I imagined all these people coming, and it was going to be this huge success. And of course, that's not how it goes when you're brand new. But as things have progressed and I started doing showcases, that's when more people were familiar with the works and they got to hear it in the showcase. And that's when more people started having an interest. So it's exciting to watch it grow also.
It must have been quite a financial investment, as well as the time, but the financial investment of doing showcases and booths at conferences and traveling there. You must have really been so committed to this, almost as a mission for you.
Right. Yes. I kind of, once I get something in my head that I'm really passionate about, there's not a lot that can stop me. And my husband was like, why don't you just go and just see the conference, see how people do these booths, just check it out. And I was like, nope, that's not how I roll. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go there and I'm going to do it. And once I decide, I really commit, and I have a big passion for it and a total joy for doing it.
Hey teachers, this is Amy Chaplin from PianoPantry.com, and I wanted to let you know about my Music Lab products available on Top Music Marketplace. After years of trying to find a simple and effective way to give Music Lab assignments and track progress for my students' Music Lab time, I designed a variety of Music Lab sheets. My Music Lab sheets correspond with some of the best apps and programs out there, such as the Royal Conservatory Theory apps, Rhythm Lab app, the Computer-Based Essentials of Music Theory program, and more. There are lots of great ones around the web, and this lab sheet pulls them together in one location that I've leveled for you and your students to easily follow. This Music Lab video series is useful whether you're using it for a physical studio Music Lab or sending assignment links to students online. Lastly, if you're looking for some ideas of how to set up your Music Lab, check out the Music Labs Made Easy ebook, where I give a sneak peek into my own Music Lab setup, along with organizational strategies and little pro tips I gathered along the way. Visit the Piano Pantry shop on Top Music Marketplace to check out these products.
What do you think is the biggest advantage for teachers in adding some rote music to their beginner lessons? And I'm assuming it's mainly for beginners, right?
Right. So my first few levels start with rote, but once you're in volume two, it says rote and reading. So it just really depends on the student. But by that level, by a couple years into lessons, they're able to read. And I can't imagine teaching my beginning lessons without rote pieces. And they add so much imagination and expression to the music. And it's such a wonderful way to work on technique, because they're not looking at music. They're not trying to overthink and decode all of that music. So they can really open up their ears and listen to the sound and look at their hands and focus on how their body feels, how their body's moving, what sounds are producing. And they're able to move so much around the piano. And I feel like we're so lucky as pianists and piano teachers to have this instrument. So for one, it has the pedal, which, I mean, if you just put a pedal down, You play in low A and a high C. I mean, how gorgeous is that? It's just beautiful. And I'm doing my third finger only and some pedal. So most instruments, you think about a violin or any other instrument, I can't think of any where you can make such beautiful sounds from the very beginning, just fully on your own. So it creates just such an enthusiasm in the student, and the beginning recitals are gorgeous little works of art instead of these dry little reading pieces. If you imagine a beginning piano recital, you think of it as very dry and boring, but I think my beginner recitals are really beautiful because of the rote pieces. So there's so many benefits: technique, expression, recital repertoire, enthusiasm.
So the one thing that you haven't mentioned, of course, is reading. So is there a connection between the rote music for you, or do you use rote as the sort of artistry and to keep kids moving along while they're still doing the reading in the traditional way? Or is there some kind of connection that you make between the two?
I think the connection happens gradually. So I work on reading in a different part of the lesson with a smaller set of notes and smaller set of rhythms. And with the rote pieces, I put the score up. So they're often looking at the score and they're seeing how the music is revealed. What does that music look like when it's represented? So they're able to see it, even though they wouldn't be able to sight read it. And it creates connections in the brain just by being able to see what that music would look like. And then for the reading, it's much simpler. And then over time, it all comes together.
And what advice would you give to a teacher who's still more focused on the reading than anything at the moment? What advice would you give about using some rote in their beginner lessons?
So there's a specific way that I teach them. So my first piece of advice would be to just give it a try. If you're scared of it, just try. There's nothing harmful that will happen. It might be easier than you think. But the way I do it is, I think it's very important that the student listens to the piece before they try it. So throughout the week, I will assign for them to listen to the rote piece. So I have all of mine as audio files and videos. So I just want them to get familiar with it throughout the week. And then when they show up at the lesson, they've already heard it. And I play the whole thing in its entirety. And then I'll ask a question. So there's something for them to listen and look for, so they're not just spacing out. So I play it again, and they are looking for something specific. And then I break it down into pieces. So I either take little phrases at a time, or if there's a repeated left-hand bass line, I would teach that first while I'm playing the other part. So again, they're really getting it in their ear. And then you just put together as much as they're able at the time. So sometimes they can't remember the whole thing in one lesson. So you would just do half of it, just whatever they're able to digest. And you can feel once they're maxed out. You don't want to push them past that point where they start to get confused. And then throughout the week, they can watch the instructional videos or the demonstration videos. So if they forget anything, they have the score and they also have the visual reminder at home. And they can learn almost all of the little gems within 1 week, if not 2 weeks. So I take all of my students through all of the little gems and we get through them really quickly. And then a huge benefit I find is that students start improvising and composing without you even asking them to. And they're always very pattern-based and using the same sort of techniques. Like if they're just doing third finger, I had one student the other day, like, and so he just came up with that motive. And I said, why don't you try it on F and B? So we can create this whole piece. And it's just little patterns based off of the third finger, like his little gems pieces that he had been doing. And I never even asked him to do that. And that happens all the time.
Yeah, what a fantastic outcome to have kids just so inspired by what they're hearing and what they're experiencing that they're like, they just kind of start making things up themselves. I think it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's been a fairly long journey, as we've said, for you from those first ideas about this, even before you had kids, to where you are now. What's been some of the hardest things about that?
The hardest part I find is kind of that final quality control. So I have all these different people that work for me, like transcribers, editors, graphic designers, And I'm very involved in that process. But in the end, everything has to get approved by me, and I have to notice every tiny little detail. So that can get kind of stressful. And then just the whole technology side, technology is not my favorite part of creating all of these things. I would love to just be the creator and then hand it off to somebody and have them hand
do
it
the
back
rest.
And me do the final say. Like I heard Jim Brickman at one of the conferences, and people asked him, like, how do you compile these books? And he said, oh, I just compose the music and I record it and I send it off. And that's all he has to do.
That's the ideal,
so
isn't it?
Like, that would be really amazing.
One day, Paula.
I'm halfway there. In the beginning, I would write everything out. I put everything in Finale. I did everything completely on my own. So as time goes on, I delegate more and more.
Mm. Now, people who have used my notebook beginners framework for teaching creatively will already know one of Paula's works. I think it's Thunder Showers. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you very much for giving me permission to use that. And I know I've got so much feedback about that whole framework, but in particular, the introduction to rote pieces and the composition that I've got in there, people have really loved. So thank you for that. And as I mentioned at the start, we've got you as our featured composer for Top Music Sheets, which is our free pack of sheet music that we give all our Top Music Pro members. So tell us what's in store for our members this month.
Right. So this summer I worked on a book of rote duets. So there are 9 different duets, and you can use any combination of rote and reading, just depending on the reading level of your student. And some of them can be used almost in the very beginning of lessons. And it goes anywhere from, I would say, from very beginning up to 2 years of instruction. And I always love composing rote pieces because you have such a variety of rhythms. So we have 3-4 and 6-8 and just a variety of using all of the keys. So there's many moments where I'll use the bottom key and something very high up at the same time. So it can either be used with 2 students. And I thought of the idea before this crazy pandemic. And I thought by now for sure there'd be in-person lessons, but you can also do it with the teacher playing one of the parts and the student playing the other. And supposedly there's some new technology going on where people can try and play together. So that would be a really exciting way to try and do that.
Well, straight after this, we're going to test it out and we're going to try and record some of these. I'm really looking forward to it because I've played through, I didn't say that I was going to do the secondo part, but they're the ones that I've played through. So I hope that's okay with you. And they're so groovy. They're kind of, well, they're obviously pattern based, but they've got that kind of a bit of a pop kind of feel to them. Some are kind of rocky, some are flowing. So I'm super pumped to record these with you. And we'll be sharing those videos either as part of the show notes for this episode, or we're certainly going to be sharing them on YouTube and socials as well. Fingers crossed that it all works.
I'm excited to try that.
So for people that haven't already found out about you online, where can people go to find out more about what you're doing?
So I have 2 websites. I have littlegemsforpiano.com. So if you subscribe there, you get, I think it's the Thunder Showers piece if you subscribe. And then pauladreyer.com is my more compositional website that has the album. And if you subscribe there, you get a video that describes my creative process. And then I'm on Facebook and Instagram is littlegemsforpiano. And I have a YouTube channel for the Little Gems for Piano.
Fantastic. And I think you might even have a special offer for our listeners today.
I do. So there's a discount code of SAVE15, just the number 15 with no space. And you'll get 15% off of the one-time downloads. And I'm working with my web person to see if I can get that code also transferred to the hard copies. So I will keep you posted on that, but for sure the digital downloads.
Fantastic. We'll pop all the links you need in our show notes. And of course, our Top Music Pro members, not only are they getting your book of music this month, but they also get discounts ongoing because of the great relationship that we've got. So thank you for that as well. So look, Paula, thank you so much for coming on the show. Let's go and play some duets.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. It was super fun.
Great to see you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed hanging out with Paula as much as I have. And if you've been to any conferences in the last 5 or 10 years, as I've said, she's probably been at a desk in the trade area just sharing her love and passion for music education with you. So make sure you look out for her when conferences start back up again, and make sure you go and check out her fabulous resources and books and music. Next week on the podcast, we have another friend of mine. This is a friend who's we've known each other for about 10 years or thereabouts. Her name is Amy Jorgensen. Some people might know her as Amy Basto. She's actually a film composer. And what we're going to be talking about next week is how she has managed to pivot so successfully from being your regular piano teacher to starting a membership for film music composers to pivoting again now to running a virtual piano academy. This is a fantastic story that I know you're going to love. And I know for those business-minded and entrepreneurial and innovative teachers out there, next week's episode is going to give you some incredible ideas about how the future of your lesson mix might look. Because it doesn't have to be all about in-person or online or a mix. There might be some other options you can explore as well. And we're going to touch on those next week. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to The Topcast. I'll speak to you next time. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.